You're listening to the MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update Podcast.
And we received more news from the Canal Plus stable around their intentions to outline a structure, so post-takeover structure of the MultiChoice deal. We know that that deal has still been in the works, subject to regulatory approvals, and we finally got a bit of clarity around some of the concerns that might have been outlined by the regulators and by the legislation as we know it. We're going to be taking a look at what this all means for the MultiChoice deal. And its efforts to go ahead. I'm joined on the line by tech analyst and journalist at Business Day, Mudiwa Gavaza, to take a look at this. Good evening, Mudiwa. Lovely to catch up with you, as always. The last time you and I spoke about this deal, we had spoken about a lot of concerns that could present themselves given MultiChoice's position as a national broadcaster and the legislation around that. What clarity do we have now on the post-takeover structure that's being proposed here?
Good evening, Jimmy. Long time since we, last spoke about this, and at least we have a good update that we can, use as fodder for today. It's an interesting one that they've come up with, but it's probably the direction that many people would have expected, because, last year, one of the key insights that came through when Canal Plus first started buying up shares in MultiChoice, especially when they crossed the 35% mark, and started debating around the issue of mandatory offer and all of that stuff, there were all of these issues around the 20% Electronic Communications Act restricts control of a broadcast licensee to 20%. And so a lot of people said, oh no, it simply means that, such a thing can't happen. But we saw from the takeover regulatory panel last year when they said the mandatory offer should be done, they were one of the first bodies or authorities to make a distinction between MultiChoice as a group versus MultiChoice South Africa as a holder of a broadcast license in South Africa. And it seems that the structure that is being proposed for the post-transaction, makes that particular distinction quite evident.
Mm. Mudiwa, when we look at that structure, who will own what under the new structure? What does it look like? What happens to the BEE partners? What's being proposed here?
So what's happening is that MultiChoice South Africa is going to be separated into two distinct entities, because people will know that MultiChoice operates across Africa, and as such they host and hold a number of different broadcast licenses, but the one that's in question right now is the South Africa broadcast license. And in essence, what's going to happen is that they're going to carve out a separate company/entity that will hold that broadcast license. And then that particular company is going to then be majority owned by historically disadvantaged persons, and then MultiChoice will retain a 49% economic interest in that company, but will only vote up to 20% in that. And then that entity, that company, will then contract out, the billing platforms and all of the usual things, that comes with holding a license to MultiChoice and MultiChoice South Africa. And that's how this thing is being touted and done. Some notable, elements when it comes to how the deal is being structured is that when it comes to the different entities that are going to form part of it, we've got a 27% economic interest that will be held by Putumanati. Putumanati is probably one of the biggest and most successful BEE structures that we have in South Africa. They currently own 25% of MultiChoice South Africa, so they will own a 27% interest in this new entity that we're talking about. And then they're also going to bring in Sonia De Bruyn's Identity Partners, as well as Ernest Quinda's Itai Capital. That's the Identity Partners Itai Consortium. And then there's also a consortium by AfriFund, that's former Telkom CEO Sipho Maseko's entity. And then there will also be an element of employee ownership through a workers' trust.
Now, Madiwa, there's a portion of the business that's effectively going to, or a carve out of the business that's effectively going to now stay with the Canal Plus, and that's a lot of the assets on the African continent and other things outside of the South African business. I want to play a bit of devil's advocate here. Could this be seen as an effective way of stripping out the parts of the business you don't really care about to get the parts of the business that you do want? I mean, I think back to something like the BHP Anglo deal, where they were interested in very specific assets. Is this something that could be seen potentially even by the regulator to say that this is a stripping out of the assets that's been given forward by law, but it works out in the benefit of Canal Plus?
A couple of ways to answer that question, but I think there's been a lot that's been said about a potential stripping, but I wouldn't say that this specific example would be an example of stripping. And the reason I'm saying that is because the way that MultiChoice is structured, remember what we said earlier on, they operate in about 50 different countries. And in almost all of those countries, they've got a broadcast license. And they've structured themselves in almost all of those areas according to the different laws, within those countries, right? So you can, in essence, think about all of the different broadcast licenses that they have as existing with a form of the type of deal that we're seeing right now. MultiChoice has to, you will likely have a lot of restrictions as to how MultiChoice operates its licenses in those different countries. So they've come up with all of those different structures, right? So South Africa just becomes the latest example of something like that. That's the first thing. The second thing is the fact that at the end of the day, MultiChoice still holds that 49% interest in that news company to be carved out. Plus, they still hold on to 75% of MultiChoice South Africa. So the only thing that's changing in this particular structure is where and how the broadcast license in South Africa is being held, because that's where the headache around ownership was actually coming where that headache was actually coming out from. So I wouldn't think about it, as a stripping of the assets. And also at the end of the day, let's not forget that one of the biggest things that Canal Plus is likely wanting out of MultiChoice is distribution. When it comes to pay TV distribution, you'll be hard pressed to find a better form of distribution continent wide than what MultiChoice has been able to build over the last 40 years.
Mudiwa, does this deal kind of put MultiChoice in a better position? I know you and I have spoken about the positioning of the business and what they're doing in terms of product offering and all of that. Would this deal then allow the one side of things to go ahead from the takeover perspective, but then also put them in a better position to be able to return to being a profitable business? I mean, technically, if I remember correctly, there was a point where we were discussing things like technical insolvency.
This one is a tough one, and I'm going to answer you in two ways around this, Jimmy. The first one is that the way that the deal was initially premised, a couple of things have changed, around that. One of which is the fact that when it was initially proposed, Canal Plus was looking at creating an entity that ends up having about 50 million subscribers across the African continent, and then they can take themselves to market and grow even more from there. However, since that deal was announced, we've seen, you know, to your point about technical insolvency, that MultiChoice has been losing a lot of subscribers, you know, over the last year. I believe over 20%, you know, of that subscriber base, right? So MultiChoice has a lot of clawing back that it needs to be done, right? That's one. Two, one of the big things around this is a question of whether or not MultiChoice needs Canal Plus to be profitable, right? In my view, I think MultiChoice can stand on its own and be profitable on its own. They've had the misfortune, I don't know if I can call it misfortune, but they've just had a dynamic where up until 2019, they were housed inside of Naspers. And if this deal is allowed to go through, they're just going to be housed inside of Canal Plus. So getting a sense of what a MultiChoice standalone on its own without a big brother or bigger entity is something that I don't think from a profitability point of view we've been able to get a sense of, you know, to say what is MultiChoice on its own for, let's say, a period of a decade, because it's just been 5 years now since they were unbundled out of Naspers, and they may soon be housed under yet another entity. So the investment case or the question around can MultiChoice be profitable on its own, we may find ourselves in a situation where, at least in the short to medium term, we may never know what that actually means, you know, a MultiChoice standalone without a big brother or bigger entity housing it.
Mm. The other question that remains is, will the Competition Commission approve this proposed structure? Do you think this structure still presents a problem for the Competition Commission, or do you think this solves the concerns that have been highlighted with regards to the takeover?
Well, it does solve a lot of the concerns, because in addition to the Electronic Communications Act, you also have MultiChoice's memorandum of incorporation, which also had the same 20% stipulation, which was meant to be in line with that ECA. So if, you know, on the one hand, the regulator is able to say, okay, fine, this is a deal, this is a structure that can, you know, withstand scrutiny, then it would make sense, you know, to say that, you know, then it would make sense for your competition authorities, you know, to allow the structure to go through. Now, whether or not this is good for competition, I would imagine that the SABC and perhaps eMedia might have a different take, you know, on the whole thing, because they've long complained that, you know, that MultiChoice holds what they see as a monopoly or, you know, outsized market power in many industry, especially sports. We've seen, you know, countless court cases around the sports rights that MultiChoice holds through SuperSport, you know, with ETV and the SABC, you know, complaining about that market structure, that market dominance. So that may be something to consider, but when it comes to remedies, I'm not too sure what the tribunal or the commission could say, you know, to solve something like that, because that has been, you know, if we're going to be honest, that's actually been the status quo for decades, right? So does the Competition Commission use this as an opportunity to perhaps correct the market in some way, or do they just simply let what's been happening just continue, you know, in perpetuity?
Certainly some interesting thoughts and things we'd have to look at. Obviously, the deal is still ongoing. It still needs to be approved, but we'll keep an eye on it and see how it develops. Thanks so much, Mudiwa, for those insights and for the contributions. Mudiwa Gavaza, tech analyst and journalist at Business Day, joining me to take a look at the latest developments in the MultiChoice Canal Plus takeover deal.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update podcast, uploaded weekdays at 7 p.m. For more MoneyWeb podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.